we go. This is Jude Carson speaking with Paul Kitchen, the headmaster at our NS, November 2009. One of the things I wanted to clarify was the beginning of the school. Like your website, which is great, has it specifically going from Thompson School to being up here on the hill and having been purchased by Mr. Robertson. But in some of the research I did, there's a story of it going to two different sites in the village.
I think it was in three different sites.
Yes.
From 1877 to 1891, I think it had three different sites.
Yes.
The old, certainly, so for sure it was at the top of the school where the medical offices
were. Okay, so you're confirming that, yeah, because that's the second one.
And it was certainly in a house. It moved to Rossett because of the fire, and I think it just went from, it was a very, very small school.
Right.
And for that first 14 years, I think it had three different locations.
Okay, then that's fine. Because that's what I sort of came up with. In the beginning, the cadet corps was a significant part of the school, or not the very beginning, but at the military aspect, training for the military, or that's my understanding. How long was the cadet corps part of the school?
Well, cadets took a more formal role in Canada, and in 1908, it was defined. The mission of the school was defined as preparing young men to attend RMC, which really meant to be the military leadership of the country. So that was the intent of the school, and that was its mission. So it was a huge part of the school, but it was a huge part of what Canada was. I think it reflected the values that Canadians had. If you think we lost 68,000 men in the Second World War out of a total population of a little under 10 million, and only 5 million of those would be men. I mean, well over 1 in 100. So, I mean, the whole makeup, I think... the school reflected the society of the time. Mm-hmm. So I think the cadet and the Canadian military was a huge part of what we stood for and what the country stood for going into the 20th century.
But it still tried to maintain the part of the instilling strong moral religious values, because that was part of the beginning too, was it not?
Yeah, but I think if you go back into our military, we would think that's what we were doing with them too.
Yes.
So I mean,
yeah.
I think there was a real consistency of what this school was trying to do was prepare people to be the leaders in the community of Canada, and mm-hmm. reflecting the values of the day. So the strong religious, I mean, until 1908, there were no public schools in New Brunswick, and the only schools that were the Madras schools run by the Anglican Church were purchased in 1908 by the government of New Brunswick to become the public education system, and they became secular, and at 1908 is when the Anglican Church had acquired this money. They still believed, so they purchased from Robertson's family, they purchased with the money they got for the Madras schools this property in the school.
Mm-hmm. How long did the Cadet Corps remain part of the...
The Cadet Corps was up to the early 1990s was part of the school. And it was really one of those sadnesses that I know I had in my career, but also for the school. again, it was pretty consistent. The school has always had to reflect the time and the era. And I think there's a relevance, but the mission of the Cadet Corps of Canada is produce good citizens. And I think that's sort of the mission of the school with an academic emphasis. And so in the 1990s, there were still people trying to make this a little military unit. it wasn't relevant for the times, and the kids were rebelling, and it was so hard to get really good instructors. And I think that there was more flexibility in the rest of Canada about what a cadet corps was. So some of those old cadet corps have carried on because they've adapted and adjusted to what's relevant today. And unfortunately, we couldn't get the people in the Cadet League to help us, so it stopped in the early 90s.
A number of the alumni of the school did serve in the wars. Do you know how many?
How many actually served?
Yes.
No, I don't know exactly how many served. I know that 54 gave their lives to the three conflicts.
Okay, that was it. Actually, I ran into Mr. Grant when he had just come from the school after doing a presentation, so he was telling me about that. It mentioned a couple of places about Ray Mackay's photo being on display in the school. Is it still?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So
it's in display in two spots. One's in Mackay House and one's with all the photos of the boys who died in the First World War.
Okay, so there are photos of all of them. Good, okay. A name of a teacher, and this is just to clarify because it comes from one of the anecdotes, Francis Keeble or Cable?
Keeble.
Keeble, K-E-E-B-L-E.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we're various spellings, good. One of the mandates was that the son of clergy could be admitted to the school free if it was necessary. Did that continue very long?
I don't know when that discontinued. It was certainly long before I came to the school. But in the last 20 years, the board has gone back to allowing children of the Anglican clergy to come to the school and through a financial aid program. So I don't know when that ceased to be in existence, but it certainly wasn't here when I came, and it was reestablished. It's not so much, I don't think it ever was absolutely a formal policy, but generous donors to the school would make sure that the fees to the school would get paid by them. So I think it was an unwritten code of the clergy in the school, and I think that's the way it still is.
Mm-hmm. Netherwood School, and when the schools sort of became united finally, would that be around 1984? And can you tell me, those were difficult times to a degree.
Yeah, I the two schools, Netherwood School for girls and Rossay Collegiate School, actually came together and formed a union in 1972. And then when they were at the altar in very, very late August, there was a split. And I don't know really what caused the split, but there was a split. So suddenly in 72, you had the terrible situation where the two schools were amalgamating, and then they walked away from it. But obviously in late August, they only had one faculty, and they only had, so you can't suddenly create another faculty. So there was a very unhappy sort of, joint living arrangements in this split party where there was the Rosse Board, and they carried on, the Rosse Collegiate Board, and the Netherwood School for Girls Board carried on, and they formed a joint management committee. So, and each school had its own head. Each of the faculty members had to answer to both heads, and both heads had to answer to all three boards. I mean, it would be a totally untenable, unmanageable, ungovernable situation. So it was inevitable that that was going to be a disaster. I mean, from a historic point of view, from the real, on the ground, I guess you do the best you can to manage the situation. So it was really unfortunate. And then in 1984, both schools, and I remember reading that in Globe and Mail in separate weeks, that both schools announced they were closing. And that's when a group of parents got together and said, well, this is nuts. I mean, you have a girls' school, you have a boys' school, you have a faculty, let's carry on. So the board of both schools gave permission for this parents' group to see if they could muster together the students to carry on. So in 1984, that's sort of what happened, is they never amalgamated, that's for sure, that the two schools came together because this parents' group formed and at the end, the boards of Rosse Collegiate and the board of Netherwood, this board of parents became the Rosse Collegiate School Board, and the Netherwood Board then had land, but no school. So in 1984, they came together, but they didn't amalgamate.
But when did the name Rosse Netherwood School, when did that kick into play?
About 2000 or 2001, I can't remember exactly. When this school came together, the name was switched to RCS Netherwood. So it was amalgamation. It's using the RCS from Rosse Collegiate School and Netherwood School for Girls. They used the Netherwood part. So the operating name from 1984 to about 2000, maybe it was 1999, it was in there, was RCS Netherwood. But, you know, for people at the school, they knew what RCS Netherwood were, but people outside,
yes,
listen to RCS. I got mail for Roman Catholic School, Netherwood. It doesn't even have school in its name,
yes.
RCS. So it was, again, it was that 1984 parents group who were at the 11th hour trying to launch this school from two schools that had closed. So, that's how the name RCS Netherwood came, and the evolution was to a name that at least had school in it. And so there's where Rosse Netherwood School came from.
The difficulties in 1984 around that time, were they financial, numbers of
absolutely,
school?
Yeah. Both schools.
Yeah.
The financial was greater for Rosse Collegiate School than Netherwood School for Girls. But the Netherwood School for Girls, by this time, you've got to remember, hadn't had classes on the campus since 1972. So they couldn't suddenly go back to having classes.
So they were having their classes. They were taking them here.
Yeah.
Yes.
So from 72 to 84, the girls walked up the hill every morning. In 72, they had chapel separately. And then after 73, they had chapel every morning on this campus and carried on.
And
the
you
rest
still
of the
have morning chapel?
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with
no,
that.
No, it's just I didn't want to forget because...
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you've been at the school, you've had certainly longevity compared to before that. You've seen a lot and interesting times at the school as far as what has happened in the past number of years. It seems to be very successful and has grown quite a bit. Would you care to speak about that? What you have seen in your time?
I think the school's pretty relatively healthy. I mean, we've I think modernized the campus, and I think we finally have seated in the alumni the premise, I hope, that the school has to be relevant for the day the students are in the school, and not relevant for the time the alumni were there. The school has to serve the students that are living at the school today, just as it had to serve the school. And I think for a long time, there wasn't always the vision that of how to make the school work. So I think the board's given me a lot of support to try and make the school relevant for the students of today. So we've seen a lot of support. I'm pretty thrilled with the alumni, and I'm thrilled with the enthusiasm parents have for the school. I think a good independent school that's well run will work anywhere in Canada. It's just lots and lots of hard work, and a boarding school is probably a little more challenging because it's in today's world, it's not what people think of first. So, I don't know. History will look at that.
Yes.
We've had a lot of long-serving heads. There are three great heads in the school's era. Dr. Hibbard was the head from 1908, right when the Anglican Church bought the school from Robertson's family till 1938. So he did 30 years, and Dr. Hibbard, or Dr. Bonnycastle, then did 1938 to 1970, and except for the years he was away in the war, so he did 30 years. And Susan B. Ganong was the head of Netherwood from 1904 to 1944, so she did 40 years. So, and they were all visionary leaders. And I think the schools, all those schools worked in those eras because there was consistency, and they found a head that got the support needed to make the school work. And I think a large portion of the problem, Dr. Bonnycastle retired in 1970, and if you look at the history from 1970 to 1984, there were immense number of turnovers of heads in Netherwood, and there was between 1970 and 1987, when I came in those 17, there were five different heads for Rossay Collegiate School. So they didn't have a governance model that would work. Must have been a very, very tough time to be a leader of a school when you're answering to three boards. I sure have enough trouble answering to one board. The board would agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's, the school's history would say that if you get a long-serving head, the school works better. So maybe I'm just part of that accidental history.
Ms. Ganong, now, she had written a book or a pamphlet about life at Netherwood, and we can't find a copy of it anywhere. Would you have it in your files, do you know?
Yeah,
and
I think
is it possible to see it?
Yep, I think I do have it.
We have a lot of anecdotal stories.
Do you have the history of Netherwood?
No.
Well, I can provide that for you.
That would be wonderful, but just to give a bit more concrete information. Your website, it had, there was, I think one year it was the 130th anniversary, and some of the alumni had done, looking back through the files and had quoted from it, and they were excellent. They went through the years of the school and just little tidbits, and I'm wondering if we are allowed to use any of that material, as long as we give it credit.
Sure.
Good. Yeah, because that was very helpful. The number of students now, and the number of buildings.
231 students. I don't know how many buildings, but I'll count them for you.
Okay. Let's see, anything else? Oh, yes, photographs at the school here from the past. I know Brian Perkins had said he had discussed at some point obtaining some of those. Is it possible to use any of those?
Mm-hmm.
Good, okay, well, we'll check with you further along when we get to that stage. We're getting there, slowly but surely. Is there anything else you'd like to say about the school?
I think the school has, history is, has been just so intimately involved with Rossay. I mean, it's a little different today. I guess the town now has two local public schools that are much, much larger than the school. But I do think the school's history and the town's history were so intimately intertwined, and many people knew of the town of Rossay because of the school. And Rossay, if you said I went to Rossay, I mean, that was this school. And I think sometimes we put our prejudice of orientation, like there's, you know, obviously many more people supported public schools than the independent schools right now. But in 1891, when the school moved here, there was not a public school system. And there was tremendous success and wealth in Rossay that I think was partly due to the school's placement here. And maybe the school was placed here because of that, but it was a very hard to take the context of the 21st century and look back at the evolution and development of Rossay and not have that fundamentally connected to Rossay Collegiate School and Netherwood School for Girls, because, you know, Netherwood School for Girls really, in its terms of history with Rossay, has the same length of history. I mean, I know the school was co-ed until it moved up the hill, and then immediately Netherwood School for Girls was, I think people miss that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they put the context of today's world when they're doing it. So I just, obviously there would be no prejudice with you because you would just come from an absolutely arbitrary, neutral point of view, but I think
Yeah. No, but I agree with you. I think you're absolutely right. It's integral. The history of the school is integral. It's to the history of the village, actually. It's sort of the two together.
Well, and I don't think the history of the village would have been anything like it was mm-hmm. or developed. Mm-hmm. So, I do think that's interesting and significant.
Yeah, and that's good. And that's basically all I need. Because, as I